AM 980, KKMS brings you Jan Markell's Understanding the Times. 2 hours that look at all the issues of the day, from apologetics to politics, prophecy to the culture wars. Keeping you on the cutting edge, here's Jan Markell.
Welcome to the broadcast, everyone. This is the program brought to you by Olive Tree Ministry. This is the ministry and the program committed to helping you understand the times, contend for the faith, and become watchmen on the wall. And I have in studio with me of this hour, for actually 2 hours, co-host Tom Marsland. Tom, thank you for coming in.
Hi, Jan. Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thank you. And we're going to go right to our first hour guest, and I want to just say a word or two about his book, and before we bring on Rowan Scarborough, because the book is titled Sabotage, America's Enemies Within the CIA. And I think that Rowan is one of the best investigative reporters and authors. And again, his newest book asks if the CIA has become a rogue agency. I'll tell you a bit more about his background in a minute. But here's just a couple of comments on the back of the book, one by Bill Salmon. And Salmon says, in Sabotage, Rowan Scarborough exposes the CIA bureaucracy as a petty, vindictive lot bent on destroying a president because it did not agree with his policies. Various bipartisan commissions have documented the CIA's failures before September 11th, 01. Scarborough reveals its anti-administration tactics. After the attack, the CIA could not find bin Laden, but as Scarborough shows, it still found time to try to bring down Bush. And then another comment by award-winning nationally syndicated talk show host Lars Larson says, when I need to know the inside information, I call Rowan Scarborough. In Sabotage, he provides the proof for what many of us have suspected for a long time, that while America is fighting a war against terrorists for its very survival, elements inside the CIA have been trying to undermine our president. Anyone who cares about America's future should pick up this book and pay attention to what it says. Rowan Scarborough, welcome to Understanding the Times.
Hello?
Yes, we've got you. Thank you. Welcome to the program, Rowan Scarborough.
Oh, thanks very much for having me on.
I have Tom Marsland in studio with me.
Hi, Rowan. How are you
doing? Hello, Tom. Very well, thank you.
Good.
Let me just get into some comments about your book, Rowan, and I think you may have heard my commentary on it here in the first opening 4 minutes. But your book seems to focus a lot on lies, leaks, and incompetence. It reveals that those who are hired to protect us don't get very high grades. How far back do you see this problem going?
Well, it's something that I believe was unique to the Bush administration. We all know that there were leaks in the federal government, and there have been leaks since the press and the government came together to sort of monitor each other. But I think it was unique in post-9/11 Washington, because the CIA leakers set out to do things that leakers normally don't do. Leakers normally want to expose wrongdoing. And so they'll tell you about an official who is doing something wrong. They're a whistleblower. Or expose a flaw in a policy. The administration is saying one thing, but actually a document shows they're doing other things. What elements of the CIA did was write a whole new rule book for leaking. They began leaking smears against key members of the Bush administration, serious allegations, some of them criminal wrongdoing, that turned out not to be true. But in the meantime, between the time the allegation was made through leaks to the press and were circulated widely, and the time the person was cleared 18 months later, the person had already been damaged. The damage had been done to the administration, and the exoneration was not reported at all in the press, or reported very little. So the CIA accomplished what they wanted to do. They wanted to damage the person they didn't agree with, and they wanted to shift blame for problems away from the CIA and on to the White House.
Rowan, can you give us a real-life example? What would one of those cases be that we'd all know?
Look at somebody like, well, one is John Bolton.
Yes, I was going to go there.
A Republican hardliner, anti-Castro, very tough on North Korea. The CIA analyst leaked that he delivered a speech on Cuba and did not get it cleared properly. And in other words, he released classified information without it being cleared, which is a crime. Okay? That allegation was picked up by the press. It was picked up by Democrats, and Democrats used it to hammer Bolton. They used it to hammer Bolton at his confirmation hearing to be UN ambassador, for which he never achieved confirmation. And guess what? 2 years after the leak, he methodically proved during the confirmation hearings how he had gotten the speech cleared in the State Department and gotten the speech cleared at the CIA. But by that time, it didn't matter, because he had become the guy in the press and in the blogosphere on the Internet who released classified information without without approval, and he is bitter about it to this day. When I interviewed him for the book, he is bitter about being smeared by the CIA and having to fight his whole government career to try to clear his name, which, of course, made him less effective.
No.
It gave Democrats something to beat up on him with. Then you take the case of Robert Joseph. Robert Joseph was the chief arms control advisor to President Bush. He sat in the White House, in the NSC. He picks up the paper one day in 2003 and reads that anonymous CIA people are accusing him of keeping the 16 words in the President's State of the Union address about Iraq and uranium. Okay? In other words, he was the guy... And the leak said that the CIA warned him numerous times to take the words out, okay? So he became the guy who rigged the intelligence to send us to war in Iraq. He's the guy who refused to listen to the CIA, and just because he wanted to go to war so badly, he kept known erroneous information in the speech. That charge dogged Robert Joseph the rest of his career. Again, it was in the newspapers, it was on the networks, it was in the blogosphere. And guess what? 18 months later, a bipartisan Intel committee, Senate Intel Committee staff report exonerates him. They interviewed every CIA official that ever talked to Robert Joseph. Nobody ever told him that. Robert Joseph said, nobody ever told me that. And the report exonerated him. But guess what? By then, the damage had been done.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, Robert Joseph is bitter. He believes his reputation was damaged badly. And he believes the CIA deliberately targeted him because they disagreed with him on arms control and because they wanted to find a fall guy.
Okay.
So those are two examples of smears.
All right.
And there are others.
Rowan, I want to comment on something that you've written here. You say that I came to the conclusion while reporting for this book that no federal bureaucracy uses the media so ruthlessly to quiet its perceived political rivals. The CIA owns what the press and everyone in Washington wants, inside information. A leak here, a leak there can slowly pick apart a foe until his effectiveness is gone. Under Secretary for Defense Douglas Feith, Senator Pat Roberts, Ambassador John Bolton, CIA Director Porter Goss and his staff, White House aides Scooter Libby and Vice President Dick Cheney are examples of those who challenged the CIA and got beat up, thrown out, or locked up. Though through incompetence, leaks, and false allegations within the CIA, an agency charged with a lead role in the war on terror, the CIA has become one of President Bush's most damaging political enemies. Here's my thought and my question after I read something like that. It seems to me that Americans perceive outfits like the CIA, the FBI, Homeland Security, and probably a few others, that they're not Democrat, they're not Republican, they're just appointed servants who are trying to protect America. But clearly this isn't true. They're not neutral, in other words.
Well, that's right. And I've just given you two examples.
Yes.
That back up what I say in the book.
Yes.
Ruthless smears to damage somebody so the CIA can do away with somebody they don't like. And look, I'm not saying the whole CIA is like this. What I'm saying is there are elements at headquarters CIA who have been sabotaging the administration, orchestrating this war to damage Bush, to damage the war, elements of the CIA. And the question now is the new director, Michael Hayden, is he going to put an end to it? He
yeah.
says he is. He says he's going to put an end to the CIA fighting political wars and have them focus on the war, on the terror war, and we'll see if he's successful.
All right. Well, you state that the part of the blame for this mess actually goes back to the Clinton administration and its 8 years of eroding the agency, as a matter of fact, more than one agency. But how did they do that back in the 1990s?
Yeah, the 1990s were really the dark ages for the CIA. They had a very robust budget. The total intelligence budget was about $40 billion at the end of the Cold War. By the end of the 90s, it stood at $28 billion. That's a 30% cut, and those cuts really damaged the effectiveness of the CIA. George Bush the first started the cuts after post-Cold War, but the Clinton administration accelerated those cuts and persisted in implementing those cuts despite pleas from Director George Tenet at the time that the CIA was going downhill and needed a fast infusion of cash. What happened in the 90s was we lopped off the clandestine service by a third. We closed stations. We mm-hmm. closed bases from which the CIA operates, including the one in Hamburg, Germany, where Mohammed Atta was radicalized
yes.
there.
Mm-hmm.
They did not invest in language training. They didn't invest in information technology. All of this time, while Al-Qaeda is rising and while the Internet and cell phones and all these new technologies are coming aboard. And even George Tenet acknowledged in his book that by the end of the 90s, the CIA was in Chapter 11. So
okay.
think of that.
Mm.
Here we are facing this massive new threat of Islamic terrorism, and the CIA is dysfunctional. And Tenet also said that the National Security Agency, with which we listened to the terrorists, was going deaf. Now, that is a horrible record for the 90s, horrible. And what is going on now is that the CIA, with this infusion of cash from President Bush, is rebuilding itself. And it's probably going to take until the end of this decade to mm-hmm. rebuild the CIA. And that's the irony. Clinton slashed the CIA, sent it into Chapter 11. The CIA did not leak against Bill Clinton. Bush has been throwing money over there so they can modernize and get more people. And what have they done? They've leaked against him. They've leaked to try to destroy his programs.
What's with that? Is it ideologically driven?
I think it's ideologically driven. I think there are... Look at Valerie Plame, you know, the Plame scandal. She's a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
She contributed to the Al Gore campaign. Look at the woman who was pushed out of the CIA after they did a leak investigation into who disclosed the CIA prisons. She and her husband had given over $10,000 in the last cycle to Democrats. So, yes, I think there is a political theme here. I think there are Democrats, liberals inside the CIA who have used their power to leak against the Bush administration.
Isn't there some culpability, though, on the part of President Bush for not somehow seizing control of that? After all, he is at the top of all government in the executive level.
Right. I mean, he kept George Tenet on. He kept Clinton's director on. And George Tenet did not seem that interested in controlling the bureaucracy's work against the Bush administration. In fact, in his book, George Tenet says there was no war by the CIA on the Bush administration. Well, I tell you, a lot of people in the CIA would differ, and even Bob Woodward in his latest book said that there was a war between the White House and the CIA. If you don't have your people in place at the CIA, then they're not going to look out for you. I think a Bush loyalist over there would have been looking out for the president, whereby George Tenet was not a Bush loyalist. He was really a Clinton loyalist. Getting control of a bureaucracy is very hard. There are not that many political appointees at the CIA. So you basically inherit the CIA, the bureaucracy, and you have to work with it. You can't fire people willy-nilly. You know, if they did something wrong, you have to find proof and give them a judicial process.
It seems like a little bit of a mini State Department. I mean,
yeah.
No president seems to get a handle on the State
mm-hmm.
Department.
Let me just reset the stage for any who have joined us late, and that is that we are talking to Rowan Scarborough, and he is author of the book Sabotage, America's Enemies Within the CIA. Subtitle, Has the CIA Become a Rogue agency. And in studio with me is Tom Marsland. Rowan, let me, because you cover in your book pretty extensively how the CIA somehow missed this 9/11 plot. Can you review that for us briefly?
Well, I mean, the big mistake they made was, first of all, they didn't penetrate the plot, and that's hard to do. Mm-hmm. But they did not penetrate the plot. And one of the reasons is that their clandestine service had been decimated. I mean, all these old hands had been pushed out the door. They did not replace them. They had young recruits coming in, but not at a sufficient number, and they were very inexperienced. So the clandestine service was much less effective at the end of the 90s than it was in 1990s. Number two, they did do enough good sleuth work to find two of the hijackers, two Al-Qaeda-linked people, and they traced them to track them into our country. But then for some reason at Langley, through just bureaucratic ineptitude, they did not share that information with the FBI, and they could have. There's an FBI liaison person there. They could have sent it to the watch list or something, and they did not. And it's just no one has been able to explain why the CIA had the names and talked about these two guys but never followed through and alerted the FBI so the FBI could begin tracking them. And that question, other than just bureaucratic inertia, that question has never been answered. But
you know,
that was the big mistake.
It would seem to me that in an outfit like this, obviously with thousands and perhaps even tens of thousands of employees, and for that matter, even if you want to include the FBI and Homeland Security, but let's just for now limit it to the CIA, couldn't there be one whistleblower in there who would come forth and report some of these inequities and these false statements and the bungling?
That's what you would think, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I mean, during the 90s, you would think that as the CIA was being decimated, whistleblowers would go to the press and say, look what's happening to our agency. It didn't happen. It didn't happen. And so that shows you how political the place is. It wasn't until a Republican president came in that these elements, these cells, went into action and started leaking. So that's why I say it's just a political dimension to this.
How does this interact with NSA and defense intelligence agencies and things like that? Is there any concern that we need to have there?
No, the concerns with the NSA is that it was going deaf at the end of the 90s. It did not have the people. It did not have the investment in technology to keep up with cell phones and the Internet. And that was the problem. And look, our satellites are aging, okay, number one. Number two, they can't possibly cover all the intercepts that we need to do. They when Al-Qaeda is talking on a push-button phone or a walkie-talkie, satellites can't often pick that up. It's too faint a signal. So we didn't keep pace with coming up with new tactical means to intercept communications. In my book, I report on a whole new system that was put in place post 9/11 after the NSA got more money. And this system allows us to embed these listening devices where we can get down on the ground with these Al-Qaeda camps and training centers and things like that and listen to these walkie-talkie and cell phone communications real time. So that's one improvement that it has come about.
You know, if a private company were to do something that utterly lacked integrity, or if they came up short, Ford Motor Company, for example, if they deliver a car and the car has a faulty gas tank, we can go sue them. I don't know what we do to the CIA. They seem so untouchable, Rowan.
Well, they have two oversight committees, the Senate and the House Intelligence Committee. The problem is, as I report in my book, the Democrats totally politicized the Senate Intelligence Committee. It had been a bipartisan committee. Its first two reports on 9/11 were bipartisan. Then, as the 2004 election approached, it became, under Rockefeller and Carl Levin, it became a much more politicized organization. And they had two Republican allies on the committee, Chuck Hagel and Olympia Snow, so they effectively had the majority that could control the reports. And so the reports became much more partisan, and they were using Rockefeller staff was using leaks from liberal CIA people to try to damage the Bush administration.
Wow.
And these people would come to Rockefeller and complain about and make certain allegations about people in the Pentagon. Those charges would be leaked to the press, but then ultimately the staff report, where it was a bipartisan staff, would find the charges to be untrue. But by that time, the damage had already been done. So the Democratic staff of that committee became a conduit for these smears to get out into the press. And that's why that committee, people say that that committee lost its bipartisanship in 2004 when Rockefeller staff wrote a memo of how they were going to use the committee to politicize the process and go after George Bush. Mm-hmm. And people in the administration said that's when that committee ceased after 30 years to be a bipartisan committee.
You wanted to ask you, because you referenced the Dubai ports deal, and your book states that they got the White House to defend it despite public outrage. This made no sense in a post 9/11 world. The White House or anybody supporting the Dubai port situation. So how were they able to persuade the White House here?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to point out something going behind the scenes.
Yeah.
People always wondered, why was the Bush administration fighting so hard to keep the Dubai ports going? Well, Dubai has become a very key ally for us in the war on terror. We're using their intelligence service. We use their ports, their airfields. They've let us base aircraft there. But what I first reported was that they've also let us have agents, spies, inside their far-flung port system. And that's very important because we want information on what kind of materiel is moving in the ports and whether mm-hmm. Al-Qaeda is trying to infiltrate the ports to move some sort of a horrible weapon. So that's one of the reasons why the Bush administration fought so hard for Dubai ports, because behind the scenes, the UAE government is helping us a lot, and one of the reasons is letting us have spies inside their port system.
I see. Okay, so then maybe you would have been in favor of the Dubai port?
Well, I don't take positions on political
okay.
things like that. I mean, that's up to Congress and the administration. I was just pointing out there was a reason
okay.
that Bush was fighting so hard for this.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have another thought here, though, and that is, why do various administrations, including the Bush administration, have holdovers from previous administrations? I mean, if Bill Clinton was responsible for so much bungling when it comes to intelligence, Homeland Security, and more, I would just think that the Bush administration or any administration would want to come in and sort of clean house.
Yeah.
Because George Tenet was held over, and George Tenet should not have been held over.
Yeah. Well, he liked George Tenet. George Tenet briefed him during the transition. And Tenet is a very affable guy, and Bush wanted to be briefed every morning on intel. So Bush liked him. Rumsfeld went to defense instead of the CIA, and so Bush decided to keep him. And so that's how that, you know, transpired. You know, all presidents look for a member of the other party in their cabinet
mm-hmm.
sort of to have a bipartisan look to it, and so he kept Norm Mineta on as the transportation secretary. And so that's the reason it's done. As I say, you can't clean house. You can't fire the bureaucracy. They have protections. They're civil service people, and that's the way it goes.
You're listening to Understanding the Times. Jan Markell, your host. Program brought to you by Olive Tree Ministries, and we're talking with Rowan Scarborough, book Sabotage, America's Enemies Within the CIA. You can get this in any Barnes & Noble's, Amazon.com, Borders Bookstore. Is it a little bit troubling? Yes, but do you want to know the truth? Or as I like to say, Tom, do you want to have head and sand disease? Anyway, here's a quote from President Bush. This is out of Rowan Scarborough's book. "We've had a lot of leaks. I don't know where they're from. Therefore, I'm not going to speculate. It turns out you never can find the leaker. That's an advantage you have in doing your job. It would be helpful if we can find somebody inside our government who is leaking materials clearly against the law. that they be held to account. Perhaps the best way to make people sure that they don't leak classified documents is that there be a consequence for doing so. Well, Rowan Scarborough, are there any consequences for doing so?
Well, the reason I put that quote in is that I wanted to show you how much it bothered the president that the CIA was leaking against him. He almost said the word CIA. He said there's a lot of leaks coming from, and then he stopped himself.
Okay.
And I think he realized that if he said CIA, then all the stories would be, you know, Bush and the CIA at war with each other. But he knew where they were coming from. Porter Goss did a leak investigation when he took over the agency in 2004. And it was from that investigation that we found that they retired one woman employee in the CIA prison story. And she's the one I told you about that given a lot of money to Democrats. I don't know who else they found in that investigation. Because it was a very top-secret investigation. Not all of its results became known to the public. But it's very hard to find leakers. Look, I'm not the leak police. I'm a reporter, and I like leaks. There are leaks in my book. I was just pointing it out as an issue between the White House and the CIA, and that it was something that bothered Bush a lot, and it was part of a pattern of behavior by the CIA bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very hard to find the source of these things. The Justice Department is looking into a couple of them, and as far as I know, they haven't come to any conclusion. So leaks are hard to stop, and President Bush found that out.
All right, when we come back, Rowan, I want to ask you a couple of things. One would be, is there anything the average American can do? I also want to touch on a few other things that the CIA, really, their lack of intelligence was shocking and remains shocking, particularly as it concerns North Korea and Iran. We'll do that in just a couple of minutes, reminding folks that we do have Understanding the Times 07 coming up October 19th and 20th at Grace Church, Eden Prairie. Joel Rosenberg, Dr. David Reagan, and Dr. Ron Carlson, Jason Carlson, Carol Matriciana, yours truly. It will be Friday night and all day Saturday, no charge. Once you get my print newsletter, or go to the website olivetreeviews.org, get all the information that you need on the upcoming Understanding the Times 2007. Let me also suggest that if you'd like to become a CD subscriber for $30 a month, you will get a CD of every hour that we do on Understanding the Times Radio. $30 a month. Just call my office, 763-493-3010. We are coming right back. Don't forget, you have been called and born for such a time as this. So please report for assignment. Coming right back. Don't even think about touching that dial.
A reminder to Radio Archive listeners and podcasters that the Understanding the Times radio show is totally listener-supported. We air on several radio stations, which allows us to bring our programming to you. Would you consider a tax-deductible donation to Olive Tree Ministries for the radio outreach? You can send a check to Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. That's Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. You can also donate and order safely online at olivetreeviews.org or call 763-493-3010. And thanks for partnering with this ministry committed to helping you understand the times and contend for the faith.
Welcome back to Jan Markell's Understanding the Times. Here's Jan Markell.
All right, welcome to part two of this hour, Understanding the Times. And a lot of stations are only getting 1 hour of our two-hour program. And again, you can tap into our radio archives Monday, late in the day Monday, after the weekend programming. And all weekend programming is posted at that time at olivetreeviews.org. Olivetreeviews.org. You'll also find 2.5 years of radio programming archived at olivetreeviews.org. If you'd like to inquire more about my print newsletter, Understanding the Times, that is free 6 times a year. And we summarize the news from a biblical perspective, no cost. Just my office number is 763-493-3010, 763-493-3010 for any of the issues that I am raising today. I want to reset the stage because I have co-host in studio with me, Tom Marsland, and online I have Rowan Scarborough. And Rowan is, he covers national security for the Washington Examiner. He's a Navy veteran. He covered the Pentagon for the Washington Times for nearly 2 decades, where he built a tremendous reputation for breaking news. And his book, the current one that we're talking about this hour, is Sabotage, America's Enemies Within the CIA. And it does paint a very, very disturbing picture. It paints a disturbing, the thread running through the book is that elements within the CIA are undermining both the president and national security through leaks, false allegations, and just outright sabotage. So we're just talking this morning to Rowan, and we're going to ask him in just a minute if there's anything that the average American can do in a case like this. But, Rowan, first let me say this. You have – there's a bullet point here that I wanted to ask you about, because you say that how – there a bullet point on the jacket of your cover. How a CIA leak to the New York Times – deprived the U.S. of critical information in the war on terror. All right, this is extending this whole outrage because we're having leaks that are compromising our war against the Islamofascists. But what did the CIA do in this case?
Well, what you had was a program that was long overdue, and that is a program that allowed us to listen in.
Yes.
On calls from suspected terrorists overseas into this country without first doing all the paperwork and filling out a warrant and going to a judge. Because sometimes you don't have time to do that, and you lose them and you lose the conversation. And so what the administration did was it came up with the terrorist surveillance program, which was approved by the Justice Department, although it was very controversial. When a phone number lit up overseas of a suspected person, even though it went into the United States, which meant you normally would need a warrant, they would listen in. The New York Times, that program was leaked to the New York Times in order to destroy the program.
Mm-hmm.
And what it did was it alerted the terrorists to the exact type of phone call that we were monitoring. Mm-hmm. In other words, they know that we listen to them. They know we try to listen to them. They know we try to look at their emails, but they don't know exactly the circumstances under which we do that. With the New York Times story, they didn't know that. They knew that if I think I'm on the suspected terror list and I'm calling someone in America, there's a good chance they're going to be listening to me. So they stopped. They stopped communicating that way, and they started communicating in other ways. And there are other ways you can do it. You can do it by the Internet, you know, by signals on a website or something like that, or you can use couriers. You could send somebody into our country to meet with them and say what you wanted to say over the phone.
Rowan, this is tough because isn't the United States of America like the main trunk for a lot of the phone traffic of the world?
Yeah, well, that's the other issue involved, is that the way the law is written, if there's a communications overseas from point A to point B, we can listen. If there's a communications overseas that goes into the ether, we can pick it up there before it goes to the United States. But the problem is you can't always pick it up when it's in the ether. And once it hits a landline, then we need a warrant. And that was the problem. So many calls are routed through major transfer stations in this country, and that's where they want to do the intercept. They want to get into that transfer station and intercept the call coming in under that number. Well, that even though it may be going from a foreigner in Pakistan to a foreigner in the Middle East, so that's the system today. And so that's another reason they started the terror surveillance program, to be able to get at those calls.
I really don't
and
know
so
why.
So that's why they updated what is called the FISA law, and okay. There's going to be a big debate on that in the ensuing months. That now, if we can certify that we're absolutely certain this is a foreigner making the call, then we can tap that wire.
It seems like this is broken down between left, right, Democrat versus Republican, and why should it really?
Yeah.
I mean, why wouldn't I don't care how liberal you are. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you want to love your country? And support surveillance on bad guys.
The left is spewing out all sorts of stuff that we want to listen to bedroom conversations. We want to listen to John and Jane Doe as they talk from the office to home and all that stuff. That's not what they're doing. It's a targeted program at phone numbers of suspected terrorists.
I don't know what the upside for the left is. I just don't get it. Is
well,
it just
they
that
don't
they just
like
hate...
George Bush. This
well, that's what
war.
It is. Yeah.
This is a war against George Bush.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
All right.
The MoveOn.org doesn't want Democrats to talk about the danger of Al Qaeda, the danger of terrorism, the danger of George Bush. That is the issue on the left today.
Again, you're listening to Understanding the Times. Jan Markell, your host, Tom Marsland in studio with me, and we're talking to Rowan Scarborough about his book, Sabotage, America's Enemies Within the CIA. And, Rowan, as I read your book, I was reminded about something I already knew, but it kind of slipped away, and that is that fewer than 10% of any CIA agent speaks any foreign language, which obviously would include Arabic. Now, what is their thinking here?
Language. That goes back to the 90s again. We talked in the last segment about there was no investment in foreign language. And so by the time of 9/11, according to two officers that I interviewed, less than 10% of the entire workforce spoke a foreign language. So an agency that is in charge of collecting information overseas had a big, big language deficit. And it's just another example of how the agency went downhill in the 90s.
Uh-huh.
And I think they're now trying to correct that. They're doing crash courses in language training.
Okay.
They're bringing in contractors who speak a foreign language to augment the force. That's what they're trying to do to play catch-up.
I mean, you really can't sit in a phonetics class and pick up a language. You really need to bring in people that have essentially been raised in a particular culture. You know that, Rowan. I mean,
yeah, you need not only to know the language, but you need to know the idioms.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, and you need to know how people think in that area. So
so
different words may be.
It's more than a recitation of nomenclature. I mean, it really comes down to understanding the culture, and I think that's where we've come up short. I wanted to ask if you thought you were in any danger from reporting this.
Well, actually, I'm talking to you from a secret CIA prison in Poland.
Just really good connection.
And the waterboarding class begins shortly.
Begins, okay. Well, man, if I had anything to do with that, Rowan, I apologize profusely. Really do.
No, I tell you, the CIA issued a statement critical of my book. But since then, I mean, I've had to deal with the Public Affairs Office on various stories, and they've been very cooperative.
Did you attempt to vet any of it with anyone there?
Oh, I asked for an interview with Michael Hayden.
Okay.
I asked for an interview with other people at the CIA, and I was denied. I asked several questions about things that had gone on at the CIA, and I got a no comment, So, but when you write a book, with a point of view. I mean, You compile information and you believe you have the facts to demonstrate a pattern and a point of view, and that's what I did in this book. I mean, if you pick up an anti-Bush book that's nonfiction, it's going to make a case against Bush, and it's not necessarily going to have a response from the Bush White House every other paragraph.
Okay, so you've not felt in any danger, obviously. Do you think that any of the operatives that we have ever been in danger by any of this political leaking?
Oh, listen. When I tell you what hurts. When you disclose that Poland and other countries have helped us hold these senior al-Qaeda people for questioning, why should they cooperate with us again, right? I mean, if they're going to be embarrassed by Washington after agreeing to do something for us, why should they cooperate with the CIA?
But what I'm really talking about is more specifically, do you think that there's been ever an agent that has lost their life or their safety because of any of this political backstabbing?
Oh, I'm sure, off the top of my head, there have been some cases where it has come out that one of our agents has been killed because of something that was leaked, okay? But I can't recall it right now. I can't recall, in post 9/11, I do not know of any examples. Mm-hmm. Okay. But I can say this, that if you're trying to penetrate a terror organization, you approach somebody who is sort of in and out of that organization, why are they going to cooperate with you looking at everything that leaks out of the CIA? Why is that person going to be confident that you can keep my identity private if you're doing all this leaking in Washington? So I think it greatly damages our ability to recruit spies overseas.
Talking again to Rowan Scarborough, Sabotage, America's Enemies Within the CIA, Amazon.com. Any secular bookstore would carry the book. It might be buried under something, but you don't find it real quickly.
I found in the downtown Washington bookstore somebody had taken my Sabotage copies and turned them all upside down.
Well, that's kind
really?
Of kind of to be.
Yeah, it was on the front table.
I wonder where they worked.
Yeah,
maybe right. Langley. They took the bus to Langley every day.
Rowan, what do you see for the future? And let's talk short-term future, the next 5 to 10 years. We have a major national election coming up in just over a year. It seems to be that the left is gaining ground all the time. Yeah, let's take possibly a worst-case scenario if some of the hard left gets into higher office in 2008. How do you see this whole situation getting mushrooming, staying the same? Are there any answers? Are there any solutions? We can talk about the problems.
Yeah, well, a
lot's
going on at the CIA. They're hiring lots of more people. This is an agency that was cut down to under 16,000 people. It's being built up to over 20. The numbers are classified, but I think it's being built back over 20,000 people, okay? And Michael Hayden is trying to get it focused on the war to bring all these new people in. But there, Republicans have great doubts about whether he's really reforming the clandestine service to be more productive, because he has brought back two people that abruptly quit under the Porter-Goss era, okay? Mm-hmm. Porter-Goss was sent over by Bush to try to get the clandestine service back on its feet. And the bureaucracy just chewed him up and spit him out.
Mm.
And so what did Hayden do when he came back? He brought back the two leaders of that anti-Porter-Goss movement. Stephen Kappes became the deputy, and he brought back Michael Sulik to be the head of the clandestine service. It was Sulik who fought reforms by the Porter-Goss people. He referred to them as Hill pukes.
Mm.
Referring to their former jobs on Capitol Hill, and resigned in protest. And Michael Hayden has brought him back. So there are Republicans on the Hill who have questioned whether he's really trying to reform the place or take it back to the tenet years.
Let's play Hollywood for just a second. Is that okay with you, Rowan? The CIA is sitting around, and this is a question, not a statement. Is it sitting around on a bunch of really unbelievable secrets that would upset the world? Is it sitting around on secrets about governments and presidents? Is it sitting around on a secret about Roswell, New Mexico? Is it sitting on something that's unbelievable that would upset the world, and that gives them some sort of an upper hand on presidents or on any sort of political leadership?
Well, that's kind of like what J. Edgar Hoover liked to do. He liked to get gossip on people,
mm-hmm.
and then let people know that he knew about it. And that's one of the ways he wields power. The CIA knows lots and lots of things, lots and lots of secrets. that I'm sure would astound the world that are that it does not leak for whatever reason. And but what those are, I don't know. I mean, whether it knows something particularly damaging about Putin and the Soviet Union or another leader, I just don't know. A lot of times I'm astounded by how little they know, how little they know about how Iran works, how little they knew about Iraq before we invaded Iraq, how our failures in Pakistan, tribal areas, to get at Al-Qaeda. So sometimes I'm more astounded by what they don't know than what the secrets that they do have.
Right, yeah, because you said, and I jotted the comment down, that CIA's complete lack of intelligence on two of our biggest threats, North Korea and Iran, we really do not know the nuclear capability of either. And I have to ask, how can an intelligence organization be so unintelligent?
Yeah, well, I it's hard to penetrate a government. I think a lot of the spies we got it during the Soviet era were walk-ins. But it's clear that we had no good sources inside the Iraqi regime at the onset of that war, and we had to. They sent CIA people into the north and tried to get them to recruit people on the run, and those people, a lot of them, were not reliable. I don't believe we know how the Iranian regime functions. I don't think we know how the mullahs interact with their leaders and their Revolutionary Guard.
And that's sad. That's sad. But that would really be helpful if we understood those things.
One officer told me that if we wanted to penetrate Iran, it's something we should have done 25 years ago.
Sure,
that right after the Iranian Revolution, we should have found young people that were going to move up in the government and get them on the CIA payroll.
You know, most people,
he doesn't believe we did that.
Most people's view of the CIA comes from movies like The Bourne Identity. There's a good versus evil in the bureaucracy. They argue with each other.
Yeah.
They order people killed at the drop of a hat. You know, people are dropping off here and there. Is it really a more boring agency than that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's just left. You know, Hollywood is always going to attack the CIA from the left.
Yeah, they are.
Claiming that they do all these nefarious things.
The odd thing is they seem to have friends in the CIA, in the bureaucracy.
The irony of this whole thing is that the CIA kind of became the leading anti-war movement inside the government or the left. That's the, you know, exposing programs it didn't like, going to war against Bush people, the Joe Wilson trip to Africa. That's the irony of the whole thing, because the CIA has always been the boogeyman to the left, and now it's become sort of the champion for the anti-war movement.
Didn't George Herbert Walker Bush, wasn't he the head of the CIA?
Yeah, very, very briefly, you know, in the 70s. He was the director there. And he just came back to the CIA for the 25th anniversary of something. Or maybe it was the 50th anniversary or one of the anniversaries of the CIA. He was over there this week cutting a cake with Michael Hayden. And he did the Hayden approach when he was the head of the CIA. He did not rock the boat. He tried to get along with the bureaucracy.
And that sounds like the Bushes overall, though.
Yeah. Well, Bush tried it with Porter Goss, to send Porter Goss over there. And as I say, Porter Goss never had a chance. He got absolutely chewed up.
Hmm.
Well, Rowan, again, I want to give the name of the book. It is Sabotage, America's Enemies Within the CIA. Has the CIA become a rogue agency? Rowan, in about a minute or so, in a situation like this, because these positions are appointed, there really isn't much that your average American can do about this, is there?
No, I don't think so. It's up to the executive branch to run the CIA the way it should be run, and so we'll have to see. George Tenet has said it will take the rest of this decade to rebuild the CIA. And so we're going to have to see what kind of a agency it is by the end of the decade, in the next couple of years, and whether it's fulfilling its mission better than it did in the 90s, in the first part of this decade. And it'll probably take oversight hearings and things like that to get a handle on whether the CIA is doing the job that it's supposed to do. So it's sort of like we'll have to wait and see.
Well, you come from good stock over in the Washington Times. Over the years, I know there's been a time or two I've interviewed you, but also guys like Gertz and Salmon that have stayed on top of it. And I got to know Bill a little bit when I was over at the White House for just a very brief time as a guest journalist. And they these guys, you know, do you stay in touch with them or no or what?
Oh, well, now, you know, I'm at the Washington Examiner.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, and Salmon's at the Washington Examiner.
Oh, he's over there now. See, I didn't
know
that. Yes,
yeah. So we're in, and okay. Bill Salmon has a book coming out on Monday about President Bush.
Oh, well, that's
it. It's called The Evangelical President.
Interesting. Oh, okay.
Yes.
Interesting.
And Bill is still over in at the Times, as I say. But yeah, it was why I didn't leave the Times because of any problems. I had great years there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know you did. I mean, I always enjoyed reading you there when you were there.
Yeah, just a new challenge at the Washington Examiner, so I took it.
Who did you used to write the articles with over there? You had a partner, was it Gertz or?
Gertz, inside the ring.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a column we did together.
Yep. Right. Yep. Well, Rowan, thank you. Appreciate you giving up some time today, and I wish you the best with the book because. Even though you've revealed troubling things, it's things Americans need to know and Christians need to be praying about. So, again, thank you, Rowan Scarborough, for being with us.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks, Rowan. Take care.
All righty.
Goodbye now. Okay, let's see here. Now, we're going to change topics at the top of the hour. We're joined by Kenneth Timmerman, I trust. He's racing the clock because he's going to be picked up by Fox News. So does he's through with us, and we only have him for a short time.
He talks to us, and then he moves on to Fox News. That's the minor assignment. We're the major assignment.
Oh, no. The other way around, please.
Hi.
Okay. Just a quick comment here as we're exiting the first hour, and that, again, is to, and by the way, Tom, thanks for sitting in with me this first hour. We'll go on to the second hour here in a minute. Again, if you visit the website of Olive Tree Ministries, olivetreeviews.org, you will find almost 3 years of radio programming archived there. And for anybody who wants to hear this program live, we do air on various stations around the country, usually only an hour of the 2 hours. You can always tap into the home station's website, AM 980 KKMS, Saturday morning, 9 to 11 a.m. Central Time. And just click on Listen Live. It's a rebroadcast Sunday from 12 noon to 2 p.m. You can click on Listen Live and hear the rebroadcast. We're coming back to the top of the hour. Stick with us, please.